You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
And welcome to a special bonus episode, an impressions episode, a preview episode, a review episode. We're still working on it to a certain degree, but we are here today to talk about a game that is not out yet, and we're still trying to figure out what we want to do with that kind of stuff. But I am Steven Strum, managing editor of fanbyte.com, once again back with you, and here once again also for another one-on-one pod about a specific video game is John Warren, head of media.
Yes. Hello. Real quick question. We're talking about Nioh 2.
Yes.
I don't know if we said that. We did.
No.
Nioh 2.
Yeah.
Game sequel to actually a prequel to 2017's Nioh.
Yeah, it's a prequel to 2017's The Matrix: The Path of Nioh by the Wachowskis.
I liked Nioh. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to be honest with you. I'm actually really shocked that this got a sequel.
Really?
Yeah, I am. Because I guess I felt like it was good, but I don't remember it being... I don't know. I think it was... maybe it was... I was looking up the release date. It was February 2017. Now, yeah. When you look at what came about a month after that, it's like, okay, no wonder this got buried in my head. Because... Yeah. 2017 was just absolutely bonkers with Horizon Zero Dawn
Automata,
Breath of the Wild, the Switch coming out, like all this stuff. So I guess maybe this is just my perception. I played Nioh, I played a lot of Nioh, and I liked it, but I was honestly kind of shocked that this got a sequel, and I want to know how it plays. How does Nioh 2 play?
Well, besides it being a prequel to the first game, we should maybe kind of just give a very general setup of what the first game was and like what this is, because it turns out that the two games are super, super similar. in a way that I like. That's not a dig, I should point out, but we'll get into it. But basically, Nioh is a... Stop me if you've heard this before, John.
Okay.
It's a third-person action game with a stamina meter. You have a variety of weapons at your disposal. When you attack enemies with those weapons, your stamina meter goes down. There's sort of an animation priority on them. Okay. And then if you kill them, that you get XP. But here's the twist: if you die, you drop your XP in this kind of like little puddle on the ground, and you have to go retrieve it. Otherwise, you lose all your XP.
Holy smokes, Steven! I've honestly never ever heard of a game like this.
Well, you're in luck, because there's a whole new world for you to explore. About 10 million of them.
It's a Dark Souls game, huh?
It's a Souls-like, for sure.
Yeah, I had said to someone recently, I mean, really, and it was one of the dumbest things I've ever said in my life, because really, of course it would be like this, but I was like, you know, I really felt like it had more of the DNA of like a Ninja Gaiden than Dark Souls, and it's just like, no, that's basically just the fucking game, idiot. Is this kind of the team that made the Ninja Gaiden games on Xbox made a Souls game, and that's pretty much what it is.
There's definitely cross-pollination there. I feel like the this game has like a lot of shared terms, and even some of like I think one of the things that this game did that differentiated itself was borrow a lot of ideas from Ninja Gaiden in terms of just having like massive variety of weapons
and
techniques.
I, I mean, I think that's really actually what I ultimately enjoyed about Neo, that I think I kind of honestly, maybe I didn't miss it, but I do think like this got compared a lot to Sekiro, and yes, I mean, yeah. Understandably so, but I they're very different experiences. I think.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Deeply, deeply different. Like superficially very similar, just by virtue of the fact that they're both like kind of structured the same with bonfire equivalents and whatnot.
Yep.
But the way that you progress through Neo and the way that you progress through Sekiro couldn't probably be more different than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you do that through Neo 2 is pretty similar because it's basically the same structure. It's set 45 years before the first game.
Okay.
So which was set in 1600. This is set like, that's kind of like post Sengoku era. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, I am aware, but maybe for the listeners, let them know kind of what that means in terms of the world.
Yeah, it's kind of like a era of a lot of like political upheaval in like Japanese history, where a bunch of different warring states kind of came against each other and vied for power after like a vacuum was left by the death of, I believe, an emperor at the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to pretend to speak that like I'm some kind of expert on Japanese history here, but this is the Sengoku era is where you get your Nobunaga Oda, if you maybe know that name.
Yeah. And then Neo 1, you played as William, an Irish samurai.
Yes, a real person from history.
So what's the deal? Who's the protagonist in Neo 2?
In Neo 2, you are an unnamed custom created character.
I did not know that. That's interesting. Okay.
With an unnamed custom created character with maybe one of the most, like, I'm talking like Black Desert Online level of like just meticulous detail that you can apply to the character creation process.
Wow.
In this game.
Wow, for real? Like a lot real. Of like face molding and stuff like that?
Face molding, like chin side.
Holy
like
moly. Oh, wow. Okay.
Three different kinds of, like, you choose your hair, like, here's an example, is like, you know, most games like this, you pick your hairstyle, right?
Right.
And maybe you pick your hair color. In this, you pick your hairstyle, and then each hairstyle has three different, like, side settings for, like, what kind of bangs do you want? What kind of back side of your hair do you want? Do you want a mullet on this? Do you want XYZ? How curly do you want your hair to be? There's a curliness for your hair slider.
Wow. That's incredible.
And then John is like, do you want highlights? Do you want highlights in the back? Or do you want highlights in the front? What color are the highlights? You know, Holy shit. Do you want the highlights to be?
Wow.
A lot of that stuff.
So what you're telling me is that by Friday afternoon, the day this game comes out, there will be 27,000 Barth Thompsons on fucking Neo 2's database. Okay.
You'll be able to play as Conan O'Brien very easily. You'll be able to find those sliders.
That's pretty exciting. I mean, like I don't spend hours in character creation anymore. I used to kind of do that with games I'd play, but some of that is virtue of the fact that like I just haven't been impressed with a lot of character creators. Is this one pretty easy to use?
It's pretty easy to use. Like, okay. I'm also a person who doesn't spend a ton of time in the character creator, especially in a game like this, because the second you get into this game, here's the other kind of third pillar of what Neo is that kind of separates it from the other stuff, is it is a loot game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is hardcore a loot game. That was kind of a thing that wasn't necessarily super well advertised about the first Neo, and in fact, you didn't unlock a lot of the loot options until you beat that game and, like, unlock this whole weird endgame stuff. It's much more in your face about that this time, but yeah, it's like we're talking like blues and purples and yellow rarity items in here that drop from enemies every 5 seconds, Diablo style. And as a result, you're just immediately covering up your entire face and body. So like, why do you even care?
So what's the point? Right.
The one thing that is a little funny about that is Neo 1 did this too. Had these this kind of Guardian Spirit that you could equip at any point. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
In this one, and I think you could do this in the first one too, you can use the Guardian Spirit to transform into like a demon mode version of yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But different spirits have different demon forms that have different attack patterns and abilities. And you can customize what each of those individual demon forms look like as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's one thing where whatever loot you're wearing, whatever you happen to be equipped with at the time, you're always going to see that. So that's actually kind of an interesting thing to mess with.
That's interesting. So basically every single thing that kind of existed, every single system that existed in Neo sounds like it's getting just kind of like fleshed out more in Neo 2. Is that pretty accurate?
fleshed out more and I think introduced to you much quicker.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I feel like that was one of Neo's actually strangest qualities was... And maybe not even strange in a bad way, but you're like you said, the game didn't really show you exactly what it was until quite a bit later. And yeah. There was kind of a weird systemic like mystery to that, which I thought was like there were parts of that game, especially in early going, that were just kind of inscrutable about yeah. like, where is this going? You know, where are these systems going? What am I going to be doing in 10 hours? And I kind of like that, but I think I agree. I think it sounds like they've done a better job in Neo 2 by just saying, hey, no, this is what we are, because I don't think they could do that trick twice.
No, probably not, no. Yeah. And the thing about Neo 2, T-O-O, is that it's not going for the Dark Souls, like, or even to a lesser degree, Sekiro-style, like, inscrutability in terms of its narrative. It's just... it's pretty in your face about like what's going on at any given point. At least in Neo 1, it was like, you know, it was a pretty bog standard story. It seemed inscrutable, I think, partially early on because it was maybe not the best told story ever. Ironically enough, because this is a prequel, felt almost like the sequel to a game that you hadn't played yet.
Interesting.
Because you're this William guy who is, and I think that is partially because it is drawing on real history, and it kind of just expects the player to know who some of these historical figures are.
I guess, although I thought that was a stretch, but personally, but maybe it's just because I'm terribly ignorant. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and so that first game was very much like you playing as this character who is basically, he's a real figure from history, William something, I forget his last name, but he was the first person to ever, like, the first Westerner to ever be, like, dubbed a samurai in Japan, and he gets embroiled in this weird magical conspiracy thing in Neo 1 that is, like, him bouncing around between a lot of the different, like, warring factions of Japan at the time, who at that point, because that one was set in 1600, who at that point mm-hmm. had kind of solidified their power. Nobunaga's dead by the time of 1600, and that's actually a major plot point in that game. This game, I believe he's still alive, because this is 45 years earlier. But so far, because, like, the story is actually, like... It's very straightforwardly told, but there's just not much to it. It's just kind of like the opening, at least, of the game. The first like 10-15 hours that I've played so far are just kind of like you are a demon slayer who has teamed up with this guy who sells spirit stones, which are like these kind of powerful magic rocks that get produced every time you kill a demon, and he's like selling them to the highest bidder, and you're just kind of going around from town to town, village to village, killing demons, protecting people, and collecting these stones to try and get rich. There is some stuff that I don't think... it's like maybe the one thing in this embargo we're not really allowed to talk about, which is the opening cinematic of the game.
Oh, okay.
That kind of goes into... you play a silent protagonist, but there are some hints about like what your character is and who they are in this world compared to everybody else that it seems like it's probably hinting at something bigger that's going to be happening later.
Okay.
But we'll probably leave that to people. The game comes out on this Friday, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's not a huge wait. Folks will be diving in this weekend, so they'll be able to figure that out.
But yeah. I think the kind of the most interesting thing about Neo 2 to me is because it introduces so many of those different like mechanics so much earlier on, I think it does a better job this time around of being a Souls-like game that gives you so many different avenues to progress in terms of that loot system, in terms of your demon form and your spirits and your XYZ.
Right.
There are, like, the Sekiro comparison is pretty apt because they're both Souls games that take place in, like, ancient Japan.
Yeah.
But in Sekiro, you have one weapon the entire game.
Yeah.
In order to do more damage, you need to go and fight some really hard mini-bosses, beat four of them somewhere in the world, then dump all those points in, and you do a little bit of extra damage, or get extra health.
You're really focused on technique and just basically getting better at the core gameplay of the game. And, like, even the like, you know, the secondary abilities you can collect are just that. They're secondary. They basically, like, enable you to do one thing that, you know, you prefer to do. I mean, and it's, you know, you can kind of mix and match depending on, like, enemy types and stuff, but really you're mostly sticking to, your guns, pun intended, depending on kind of what you want to do.
And you're extremely limited on ammo, too.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of uses of those, and then you're right back to using your sword.
There's a vulnerability to Sekiro that, like, one, kind of speaks to the difficulty, but also just kind of the overall vibe of the game of, like, this is it. Like, this is what you got, and this is the world you're up against. And Nioh does, in the original, definitely felt like a thing where, you know, you could really grind this out.
And, 100%.
And get, you know, mega powerful. And that felt good too in a different way, but so you're saying that Nioh 2 gives you a lot of options in that regard.
Yeah, it has a ton of, by the standards of these games, like different weapon types that all have their own moves and their own skill trees associated with them.
Okay.
I for one personally, and this, I very much like this in Nioh 1, and it plays almost identical in Nioh 2, which is the Kusarigama. I think I'm saying that right. It's one of those words that I've seen written a million times, but don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
It sounded fine. Yeah.
Okay. And it's kind of like, it's like a sickle on a chain, basically.
Yeah.
One of those classic things. And you can, it is complicated. Nioh is a dense game because it has so many options that you can work between. Because now I'm going to talk about, you know, there's like 8 different weapon types, and among those 8 different weapon types, every one of them has 3 different stance types, and every stance type has different attack patterns.
Yeah, the stances were tough. I don't think I ever really mastered the stance stuff in Nioh.
And you can, at least so far as I've been into the game, I think it's really forgiving of just like letting you pick the stance that you want for the weapon that you want and not having to switch between them. For example, the Kusarigama or Kurasigama, again, I am not an expert on Japanese history.
Kusarigama, I think.
Kusarigama, okay. Yeah. In the strong stance for the Kusarigama, your basic attack is just you kind of like whipsawing this thing in like a spinning attack that goes forward a little bit. So it's very close range, but you can just keep fucking pummeling people with it over and over again. And then your heavy attack is you like throw it out at a huge distance. You have like lots of range, but no follow up. It's just like one throw, okay, and then you're done. Or if the trade off there is that being in strong stance in any of the modes here, you drain more stamina when you block and you drain more stamina when you evade.
Oh, okay. All right.
Basically,
the strong stance makes you less mobile by virtue of the fact that it drains more of your stamina.
Right. And whereas, like, the mid stance makes you drain less stamina when you block, and the low stance makes you drain less stamina when you evade.
Like evade. Okay.
Yeah. And there's a whole, like, concept of, like, enemies also have stamina in this game. So if you're using strong attacks, you're draining their stamina more quickly, usually.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you drain their stamina, are they basically vulnerable to critical attacks? A little bit like Sekiro, or how does that work?
Okay. Yep. Normal. So there's like, this game also makes a distinction between mortal enemies and like yokai, which is like name for demons.
Sure.
And human enemies just regain stamina the same way that you do, but if you get them down to no stamina, they like have to take a breath, and then you can straight up do a Sekiro style death blow.
Nice. Okay.
And which actually kind of reminds me a little bit that, like, actually, Nioh did some of the stuff that Sekiro did later on, I think, better in some ways, but, like, Nioh did it first.
Yeah, no, I mean, Nioh beat Sekiro to the punch on, like, many different things. One, the aesthetic, and also just, like, some of the systems that Sekiro used. I would just say Sekiro is, I think, a cleaner game, I guess.
Yeah.
And
it's cleaner. I think it's got a more interesting narrative.
It's got a more interesting narrative, and I think it also just, like, I don't know, it hits, it's just cleaner. Cleaner is a good word for it.
Yeah. Like From Software does what From Software does. They went out to create this, like, weird sort of modern-day Fable, and the Ninja Gaiden people made an action game.
Shocker. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But it's a good action game.
It's good. Very, very fun. No, it's good. I mean, I'm happy that they, you know, used a lot of those lessons. I mean, Ninja Gaiden kind of ran its course, and it did feel like it was kind of it did feel like a dead franchise by the end of it. I mean, maybe it'll get a revival at some point, but I do think this is a decent franchise to basically kind of reboot some of those ideas and introduce some new ones.
I mean, by the time you got to Ninja Gaiden 3, people seemed very like down on it, and then you get to Yaiba, Ninja Gaiden Z, and it's just like, oh, what are we doing anymore?
I know. Yep.
But this, I think, is like them finding like a really interesting path forward to a lot of their stuff with, like, again, you know, the Ninja Gaiden series were a lot of switching between like nunchucks and your dual swords and your big sword and all that stuff. And this is a lot of that.
Okay. So did you, said the Kusarigama is kind of your favorite, but did you feel the need to switch to other weapons, or basically does it let you kind of pick your favorites and get really great with them?
I think it really does encourage you to pick your favorites and get really great with them. The different boss fights will obviously, like, just by virtue of the fact that different enemies have different attack patterns, probably lend themselves better to some weapons than others. But using one specific weapon type will gain you skill points down a skill tree that unlocks new moves for that specific weapon type, for one. So you're encouraged to continue using them in that way. And then even just using a specific weapon, like the actual, like, loot drop that you got, makes it increase in power over time as you create, like, fill this bar that says familiarity. So it's literally doing more damage the more you use a specific weapon. So, like, if I have a Kusarigama that I like, that, like, a purple rarity Kusarigama that I want, and I'm about to go fight a boss, and I go get my ass kicked by that boss, I can just keep using that Kusarigama again and again and again on the trash mob enemies outside the boss room, and just literally go back in to fight that enemy and do more damage next time because my familiarity bar will have filled up more. Up to, and there's a max for every weapon, but, you know, it is what it is. It's still a pretty decent bump. But then I do like to switch, just because that's just kind of how I play a lot of games. I'm also the person who, if we're talking like a Final Fantasy game, right? Like, I'm not the person who, the classic kind of example of a person who picks their favorite three at the beginning of the game, sticks with them, and never levels up anybody else.
Yeah.
I always want to try out everything because I want to see that content.
I mean, that's especially good if, say, there's, you know, a need to use different abilities and all that stuff. Like, I mean, this is not a Final Fantasy cast, but it's like, I think that was, I think that was much easier in a game like 9, where everyone has distinct abilities, than maybe a 7 or 8 or even anything else beyond that. That kind of lets you just basically, you know, max out whatever you want at any time. So, I mean, I guess
the, like, characters are the materia in those games, right?
Like, yeah, that's true. So, like, you're a big Monster Hunter person.
I am. Huge.
Like, you know, that involves a lot of different kind of, like, getting great at different weapons. I mean, if you want to, you know, get the most out of that game, I feel like. None of the systems are probably as deep in Neo 2, I'm guessing, but, like, can you see yourself maybe switching weapons to, you know, other types, like, later in the game to try to get really, really great at a bunch of them? I mean, you kind of indicated yes, but...
So, yeah, I already have, and this is actually, this brings me to one of the biggest major differences between the structure of Neo and a Sekiro or a Dark Souls, which is that Neo is level-based.
I don't
know if you remember that.
You
have main missions and side missions, and they're set on distinct maps that like have a beginning and an end, and then you bump back up to a world map at the end, and so it's very digestible.
It's not really an open world, or even like a pseudo open world of a lot of the From Software games. Like, I have these big interconnected maps and stuff. It's very distinct, almost mission based, right.
And as a result of that, because there are so many different, like, and later on in the game, at least in Neo 1, you were able to eventually go on sort of like randomized versions of those missions to grind out for better loot. And that does encourage you to, because those bosses end up becoming randomized, and, like, much like Monster Hunter, different matchups are going to be stronger against certain boss monsters than others. You are encouraged to try out different weapons and find which ones, like, oh, this is a big slow guy, I want to get the most bang for my buck on a single attack, so I better use a big slow, to take it back to Monster Hunter, actually, they almost, like, straight up borrow a, term for one of the new weapons in Neo 2 that wasn't in the first game, called the Switch Glaive in this. Which is kind of splitting the difference between Monster Hunter's Switch Axe and the trick weapons from Bloodborne.
Yeah.
It's a weapon that when you change stances literally transforms in your hand.
Okay.
And changes. So it's like in one form it's like a scythe, in one form it's like a spear, in one form it's kind of this close range kind of bludgeoning tool.
Okay. All right. Well, that's kind of cool.
Which is neat. Oh, totally. Yeah. I haven't played around much with that one yet, but it does seem like it would be, if you're looking to really encourage yourself to try the different stances, that one seems like the way to go.
Okay, that's cool.
And you do get bonuses. They're like other abilities that are character specific, besides just pumping stats into like dexterity and all that stuff, which you can do as well. There are also like just, hey, if you're using any weapon and you do so, here's another thing. And again, Neo is a dense game when it comes to like just your sheer number of options for dealing with problems.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things you can do in this game is to regain stamina really quickly. You can do this kind of active reload on your stamina called the key pulse.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that was in Neo 1 as well. And
yeah,
it was kind of...
I remember that. I also remember being pretty bad at that system, but I do remember using it a few times in... I remember when I was in the heat of, like, a boss battle or just, you know, getting murked by, like, a big group. The couple times I hit that well, I felt great. Like, that felt really good to basically, like, Hulk up and, like, get another round of, like, stamina in you so you could basically just go on the offensive. I mean, that was kind of a cool thing.
And it blends really well with the idea of, in a very Sekiro-like way, of, like, breaking the posture of these enemies.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, I've run to the end of my stamina bar with this combo. I can't... But this enemy is going to get their stamina back if I don't stop... If I let up.
Right, yeah. You can't let them heal up, essentially.
Totally. And so it's like, well, shit, I can just do my key pulse and then get, like, I won't get my entire stamina bar back, but I'll get, if I can turn it right, I'll get enough.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's, like, a whole system of, like, you know, mortal, and like I mentioned earlier, there's mortal enemies that just gain their stamina back normally, but then the yokai, usually the big boss enemies, don't regain their stamina back at all naturally.
Okay.
It doesn't recover over time. And you're doing, I think this is new to Neo 2, is you can do, like, permanent stamina damage to them that, like, literally just reduces the size of their stamina bar as you fight.
I don't remember that from Neo 1, but it's also been either. It's also been 3 years, so.
And it has been 3 years, which might as well be 20 in this day and age.
For us who play games professionally, yes, it might as well be 20 years, yeah.
But yeah, it's and that ties into some of the new powers that you have as somebody who can have all these different, like, demon forms now. Because in addition to having your big super that you can pop once every blue moon, where you can transform into a demon mode, now you have, like, a third bar besides your health and your stamina called Anima. And this is definitely new to Neo 2.
Huh.
Which allows you to, they drop as loot, so they come with their own stats on top of everything. So there's a lot of numbers in this game, but there are these objects called soul cores that you can attach to your spirits, if you're following me.
Sure.
Well, and they have, like, you can only equip certain amount on them, but that allows you to, like, do basically demon attacks that, like, drain this third Anima bar.
Oh my god. Okay.
Uh-huh. So it'll be like the earliest one that I got, and it's probably the earliest one you get in the game period, is you can basically hold down R2 and your character, like, magical horns will grow out of their head to indicate that you're, like, priming a demon attack.
Okay.
And in my case, if I attached it to R2 and triangle, my character, if I was locked onto somebody, they leapt up into the air, turned into, like, a big ogre, threw a spear across the map, hit an enemy, and it did permanent stamina damage to them.
Okay.
So
that sounds fun.
Yeah. And you can only do that, like, once or twice before you run out of anima, and then you have to start doing those death blows to get it back.
Huh.
But the ability to really whittle down those bosses like that,
I was about to say, it sounds like a good way to, like, kind of prime a battle, like, in your favor.
That's 100%. Cool. Yeah. And then there's there's just a million different skills that allow you to gain that bar back even faster. And that kind of leads to what I think is kind of one of the chief elevator pitches for Neo, which is just that it's like, it has probably a much higher skill ceiling than any one of these games, but gives you so many options to go forward that if you are somebody who has been like intimidated by Souls games before, or was intimidated by Sekiro, which was even hard even by those standards, this is a game that, as long as you can beat the game like 25% of the way there, it will give you an avenue to progress. You have ways forward. Yeah,
I was about to say, I mean, it sounds almost like the opposite of Sekiro in the sense that, like, you know, you really only are managing a couple things at a time in terms of, like, a bar or something to really pay attention to. Yeah. What you're really being asked to pay attention to is, like, what is happening on screen? Like, these are things, you know, these micro moments of being able to see an attack before it gets to you, or evade, or, like, you know, that stuff is in Neo, but it also feels like there are a lot of other things that if you invest in, you can use those resources in order to kind of turn the tide.
Totally, that's cool. And in a very Uncharted stole from Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider stole from Uncharted kind of thing here, in kind of a leapfrog situation. One of the coolest things that you kind of you hinted at, like the idea of like watching animations and stuff in Sekiro, one of my favorite things, probably one of my favorite mechanics in any video game, is the Makiri counter. I don't know if you remember this, if you played much Sekiro.
No. Well, no, go ahead.
Well, basically, in Sekiro, there's this, like, one move you unlock very early on where enemies will do, like, threatening attacks, and...
Oh, yeah. I just didn't... I could not remember the name of that, but yeah, that's a very cool, very, very cool thing that if you got good at it, that was a powerful, powerful weapon.
Totally, yeah. It's like, for people who don't know, in Sekiro, if an enemy is doing, like, a thrust attack at you, you can dodge into them, under their guard, kick their sword or their spear down into the ground, and then stab them up close. And Neo basically stole that. That's basically good.
Yeah.
It's a smart thing to take. And that's a demon move in this game, so it's actually different depending on which demon form that you're using.
Okay.
So if you're doing the, like, big lumbering brute attack, it's this move that you can rush forward under an enemy's guard and hit them out of one of their threatening attacks, which gives you a moment to just, like, wail on them.
Yeah.
But if you're using the really fast demon mode, you dodge through them and leave an after image behind, and if you time it correctly, they'll hit your after image, and it'll, like, basically explode and do a ton of stamina damage to them.
Oh, interesting. Is the timing on these attacks, like, pretty precise, or do you get the sense that maybe these windows are a little wider?
In my experience so far, it's way wider than Sekiro. Punishing on that regard.
Yeah, I mean, Neo always felt a little less punitive. I mean, there are definitely times in that game where I felt like, okay, like, you know, I died a bunch, and it kind of reminded me of that Dark Souls loop, but it wasn't punitive in the way that Sekiro was.
And it's actually funny you say that, because it was another thing I really wanted to point out about this game is, I think Sony is publishing this, so this might not even be on PC at launch. I'm not actually positive. I should probably find that out.
No, it just says PlayStation 4.
Okay. Because I mentioned that because I'm playing it on a PlayStation 4 Pro, and I will say, at least on a Pro, I can't speak to the regular version, the load times in this game are basically non-existent.
Oh, wow. Like, that's interesting.
It's like you die and it's like 3 seconds before you can just respawn at like the last fire equivalent. Yeah.
Wow. Just going back to what you said, February 7th was when this released, Neo 1 released, for PlayStation. It was November before it came out on PC. So it still might come out on PC, but no word yet.
Right. Yeah. And, I think, Sony's only, publishing it internationally too, which usually means that that's fine, because it was actually they did that with the first game too.
Yeah,
now that I think about it.
How's like environmental design, enemy design? Like, are those pretty strong in this entry, or
they are? They are very, very, very similar to the first game, to the point where I am pretty sure that they are just reusing a lot of assets from that first game in terms of not necessarily locales, but. But, like, I saw a well in this game that I'm pretty sure I saw in Neo 1 with, like, a rock on it.
So we didn't practice this. That's a really good segue. Thank you. Because I was going to ask you a question that's not... I'm excited about this game. I'll probably pick it up. I'll probably play it this weekend. Because I basically had a really good weekend with the first one. And I plan on having a good weekend with the second one. And that's probably about it. But, I will say, when I'm seeing the trailers for this game, I almost get the sense that this is like, how do I say this? Because it's not, this is going to sound ruder than I mean it, but it almost looks like a, we don't actually really give a shit about this. Here are the extra, here's the B team that's going to make Neo 2.
Yeah.
And like, here you go. Like, this doesn't look like the big AAA event that Neo was.
Right.
Like, Neo felt like a big deal to me. And maybe this is just my perception and I'm in the minority, but this felt very, minor, I guess. Yeah. in the entirety of 2020, this feels like a footnote. Which is kind of bizarre to me.
It's strange because I feel like, especially this month, because we are coming off of a very dry spell.
So, I mean, the fucking Sahara. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how little there was between like December 15th and now.
And during that entire time, all I could remember people saying is like, man, I can't wait till Animal Crossing and Doom Eternal.
Right.
And this game comes out before those two games, and I feel like nobody even knows that that's happening.
quietly a big week. I mean, we've got the Battle Royale for Call of Duty and Neo 2, and they both, oddly enough, I mean, I guess just because the Warzone thing got announced yesterday, but it's like, I mean, these both feel like weird footnotes in what should be, you know, the kickoff to a very, very busy game season in the spring. So it's kind of strange, but I mean, like, it sounds like a good game, though. Like, it sounds like you're having a good time with it.
I'm having a very good time with it. It's kind of, there's kind of a, because I'm somebody who fucking loves Sekiro, who specifically thinks that Sekiro is the best of those games.
I mean, some would say it's the best game of 2019.
Some would say that. Who could say that? But some would say that. And this, by comparison, very much feels like junk food to me, a person who is very deeply invested in that specific kind of, like, I am a dude with a sword fighting another dude with a sword. We are on even footing. We are going to hash this out. We are going to, like, address our differences on the field of battle in this poppy field. Whereas so, Neo is like, go fucking just shoot an ogre in the face with a gun. Why not?
So Sekiro is like your five course like chef tasting. Then Neo is basically just like, fucking fill up my Taco Bell bag with whatever the fuck you want to. Yeah. I mean, that's it kind of feels like maybe that's the feeling. I mean, that's kind of how I felt about Sekiro in the first Neo too.
Yeah, I mean, Sekiro or Neo is very specifically fill up my Taco Bell bag with these 37 gray rarity Kusari Gama drops or this Odachi that I'm never going to use. I'm going to take it back to the blacksmith girl and she's going to turn it into dust that I'm going to craft in, and I'm just going to sit here and mash the craft button until I get the stats that I want on this thing. And I want the numbers go up, stonks go up. I feel good. That's how game works.
Pound this quesarito into a fucking diamond for me. Thank you.
Yeah. Someone get Superman over here to just squeeze down real quick and see what we get. See what kind of soul core I get out of this.
Sounds good. I mean, it sounds good. Sounds like a good, It feels so bad to call like a team's 18 to 24 months work something like this, but it's like it feels like a good week to just like pick up Neo 2 and fuck around with it until the big two things everyone else cares about comes out in a week and a half. So yeah,
and then Half-Life Alyx as well 3 days later.
Holy shit! I mean, I can't believe that. I mean, this is what a bonkers month, and then April is crazier. So
yeah, and then Persona 5 Royale is out at the end of this month too. God damn. But this is, if this game had come out 2 weeks ago, I feel like we would be having a much different conversation about it.
I guess I feel like that too. It's almost like, you know, whatever. It feels dumb to do armchair CEO of these companies. That's dumb. But also like, I mean, you look at how dry the schedule was for everything. You kind of wonder if this could have maybe come out a month before.
Right.
And I don't know. Yeah, it feels like we would have had a different conversation, but it's coming out. You can pick it up Friday.
I recommend it. I do recommend it heavily. So
all right,
especially if you're a fan of these kinds of games and just want a big chunk of that. And if you are, you know, if you are looking for your entry point, this is one of those games that I would recommend as a good entry point that is way more digestible and is way more forgiving about just like giving you ways to play that will kind of let you get used to the harder concepts like animation priority, you know, things like that.
I mean, it's not, and I think this probably goes without saying if you pay attention to this stuff at all, but you probably don't need to play the first one if you you want to play. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to pay attention to, really. It's
Well, and also this is a prequel anyway, so
it's a prequel, like, but it's also it's just potato chips, y'all. It's just bags of potato chips. Totally.
The main villain in the first Neo was like a fucking bald headed black mage sorcerer dude who like. That was his whole thing. Like, he didn't have some, like, grand, like, reveal or anything like that. He was just like, a cackling... He was the fucking merchant from Resident Evil 4, but what had magic powers.
What are you selling?
Yeah.
I'll buy it at a fine price. Sorry.
how many souls you got there? but no, yeah, this is, totally. This is a good jumping on point for this franchise and also for this genre, I think.
Cool.
But... And also will probably, you know, keep you full if you're just kind of looking for one of these games. There hasn't been one of these games that I could just, like, 100% recommend in a minute, so.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's been about a calendar year since we've seen a game kind of in this vein. So, yeah, it sounds like pick it up if that's something that interests you at home, the listener. Steven, when are they going to make a sequel to Metroid Other M?
They did have to reboot production on Metroid Prime 4, so there's about...
Fingers crossed.
There's about 25 years between every Metroid game, so we have to wait for them to get through that first. So, 2050.
Okay, sounds good. Steven, it sounds like you'll have a couple of pieces up this week about the game, guides or otherwise. Yeah, sounds like you recommend it. Sounds cool. Anything else we should know about it before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think that's good. Okay. Like we mentioned, I don't think that there's a PC version currently announced yet. But yeah, it's on PlayStation 4 on March 13th worldwide is awesome. When that's available.
Awesome. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
If you want to see the rest, see them. If you want to see our podcast, then then jack straight into the Matrix so you can see the ones and zeros. If you want to hear the rest
Matrix
of the podcast,
Path of Neo 3 coming out March 2023.
If you want to hear the rest of our podcast, go to fanbyte.com/podcast. We have three feeds. This is kind of lost on some folks. So you know what? It's a lot to pay attention to. It's not your fault. It's our fault for not making that clear. We have three feeds. One is the FanWidth podcast. It is the feed you're listening to right now. It's our flagship. It's got most of our long-form content on it, and it's very, very good. The Papal Bull New Pope podcast just wrapped up its normal episodes last night. If you want to listen to a bonus episode, that's going to come out next week. And then hosts Eric and Merritt have something else up their sleeves, which they will announce soon, which is pretty fun. New episodes of FanWidth, the flagship, come out every Tuesday evening. And you love to see it. Our movie rewatch podcast comes out Thursday mornings. So check that out. We also have another feed called Fan Fight, which is mostly our wrestling podcast feed. LB Hunk Tears discusses wrestling with Daniel Riondo, who discusses MMA. That is a very good podcast if you want any sort of jumping off point.
It just feels good to listen to those two be so happy about their respective fields.
They've just got like an energy that I want to bottle and just be like, I want to bring that into basically every podcast, but I never do. It's very, very good. They're very good at what they do. Also, we are recording a pilot for a show called Sports Middle this week. Don't worry about it. It's very good. It's going to go on the fan fight feed, and it's probably going to be just total chaos. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Also, there's Fanbyte FM that has some of our short form stuff, which is very cool. We're trying to lean into some of the more digestible bites of stuff in case you need something quick.
Maybe we'll even throw this up in there just to put it in there, you know. Maybe we'll look at that.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Find Steven Strom at Steven Strom on Twitter. You can find me at Floppy Adult on Twitter. You can find Fanbyte at Fanbyte Media. And check out fanbyte.com for all the words on the page.
Yeah.
Anything else, Steven?
I think that's about it. Do you want to call this a review? Do we want to call this review impressions?
It's just It's
say it canonically in this.
It's a review.
Why not? Let's just do it. Let's just commit.
This is a review of Neo 2.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening to it and us. Listen to our other stuff. Read our other stuff. We've got very good stuff on the website too.
Oh, right now. We're just going to keep doing this, huh? Just looping it. All right. Bye.
People love the chaos.
People love it. See you later. Bye.